It's December 9th, 2018. This is Fancy Ramen. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
And I got unbanned.
That's right. We had to bring Neil back because no one else will edit the audio.
Exactly. Yep. I haven't even edited 94 yet. And
you can see how desperate we are.
That was maybe at some point we'll work something out when I'm gone for whatever reason.
That sounds like a goodbye note, but
but for now, I guess it's time to talk about anime.
Oh, is that the topic?
I don't know.
Have you been watching something
to talk about? Yeah.
No, I don't think I have been. I really can't remember.
Oh.
Life's been a whirlwind. But I can say I did. Lizzie's birthday is today, so we had a fancy dinner last night at a place called Tavern 180. My God, the best steaks.
Is it just a tavern atmosphere that's been completely flipped upside down or turned around,
shit,
I guess?
That does make sense because, like, it's in a spot to where if you, like, just looked at it, it's in, like, one of those strip mall areas, so you think it's just, like, a bar or something.
So, yeah, it would be a tavern, like the Boar's Head, kind of.
Yeah, but then it's a really fucking nice restaurant inside. Like, they serve caviar and shit type
so
of
it
restaurant.
Is a Tavern 180. It totally is. Because most taverns serve, like, cold peas and meat.
Yep,
and potatoes and other microwavable dishes.
How much was your bill after the end of the night?
Including the tip, $156.
Wow, that beats my Costco grocery run this morning.
But yeah, so we ended up celebrating her birthday yesterday. I got her a spa package, and then we went out to dinner just like randomly. I was like, you know what? Let's go dress up and be fancy. Which way should we go? She was like, let's go west because I don't want to go downtown. And I was like, cool. What are fancy places out west? And she's like, Mom really liked this place called Tavern 180. And I was like, okay, let's give it a try. And my goodness. Yeah, it was delicious.
Was it just you and her? Did you have anybody with you?
No, just me and her.
Nice.
And then you guys listened to Fancy Ramen on your way back.
Not episode 94, obviously.
Yeah, 'cause it's not done.
Once again, I take full responsibility for that.
I don't even know if I would have had time to edit it, even if the right file was up. I can use this as a segue if you guys wanted.
Normally, you're just supposed to take the opportunity, so go right ahead.
I don't know. Yeah. I feel like I should be a little more passive because I feel like I'm going to be talking a lot. And with that, I was gone for a week. I was in California getting some of that much-needed sunshine, maybe?
I can tell. You're darker than Scott now.
Such a low bar.
It actually rained quite a bit while I was there. And I don't really have anything to know of the area while I was there. The only big thing I did that was directly related to the physical surrounding was I went to maybe like the most hyped up ramen place I've ever been to called Menya Ultra, and it's apparently a chain that started in Japan, and there are two stores now in California, and like it's very much, it feels like what a more traditional, and when I say traditional I mean like a fucking normal ramen restaurant in Japan would be like. It's a bar sort of setting, very limited seating, probably only 30 people or so could get in. But because, you know, we're in California and it's
lines
hyped
out the
up,
door.
Yeah. They actually have an iPad that is in a sort of chassis outside of the door, and you have to sign up for your place in line with that. And they text you when your table's about ready, and have you come in you get a text message, I think, or you're supposed to when it's actually ready.
This is my favorite innovation in the modern era to eliminate queuing because it's even at the DMV now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, at my DMV. My DMV's great.
Nice. I haven't been to my DMV in a while, so I guess I should find out.
Yeah, you've been waiting for an excuse to go find out, to go back
been.
To the DMV, your favorite place. I have to go in for a new license, I bet. So that's not going to be fun. It kind of sucked having like a 40-minute wait, but I ended up realizing that there was a boba tea place right next door, and it was by far the best boba tea I've ever had, and there was no wait line for there, so it worked out. I got boba tea, and then by the time I was done with that, it was my turn for ramen. But the boba tea, just to really quickly iterate, I've never been a huge tapioca pearl person, which is what boba is. But theirs was like it was infused or made with honey. So like there is a subtle sweetness to each pearl, and it was fantastic. The matcha as well didn't really have like a super grassy taste, which is pretty common for like your cheaper matcha, like your quote unquote culinary grade. So I wish I knew the place because it is legitimately like the best boba I've ever had. And that's about it for that. The ramen, though, really good. The broth was fantastic. I don't think I've had better tonkotsu broth before. The only thing I realized was that like the side portions or the ingredients, like the pork chashu, all of that seemed really limited. And I'm wondering if that's just because I was like in a big city in California. So like meat's going to be less plentiful and stuff like that, or more expensive.
Are you saying that the portion size itself was small, or that they were having issues with like what was available on the menu?
The portion size specifically for the other ingredients in the ramen.
Yeah, I don't know, man. The Midwest, like every time I compare eating out there to other places, it seems like the Midwest and Texas really have it like locked in with the giant portion size.
Yeah.
On the stuff that's the least healthy for you, which, you know, is great. It's fantastic in my personal opinion, but it does throw me for a loop now, like coming back and seeing that.
Seeing all of the, like the huge amounts of meat you'll get at any steakhouse for like pretty reasonable prices.
And it's good stuff too. That's the other thing, is like, it's really good.
I did want to say though, even though it was a very small amount, the pork chashu was like shaved in like a sukiyaki thinness or gyudon thickness. Ooh. So like really thin slices of chashu, and it was like the best I've ever had.
You think that it like cooked in the broth a little bit then because of how thin it was?
I have no idea. I wasn't really paying attention to, I was only paying attention to how they prepared the noodles and broth.
Right. Cause with the bar style, you can essentially look over into the, like kitchen and prep area.
Yeah, exactly. The noodles were apparently made by hands or are made by hand every day. The noodles were great. Like everything was really good.
Were they thick?
No, thin. I'm a thin noodle man myself.
Why?
You're a thick guy? You like that udon quality?
Eggs, yeah. Anyway.
Uh-oh, nice. Neil's audio disappeared. So you get to tell me more about thick noodles for a moment.
Oh yeah, thick noodles, they give it a nice good texture and a, I don't know, a je ne sais quoi to the soups. What have you been up to this week?
Had a hockey match after recording last week, as per usual. Real tight game, a lot of fun. It was 3-4, with sadly my team being the 3. But we scored within the first like 20 seconds of the first period, and then they tied it up. And then we scored again in the second period, and they tied it up. And then I fucked up a pass real bad. We lost a point in the third period, made it. A fourth point was scored, and then we started a comeback, but it was too late, and right before we were going to get a shot off on goal for the fourth period for the third period, fourth point to tie it up, that clock ran out. So
you were not the MVP this time?
I was not, no. I'm glad that there isn't like LVP, because I could have received that.
Okay, sorry, I'm back now.
Welcome back, Neil. Back to your time while you were gone. We just went ahead and waxed poetic about noodles and other activities.
Gosh, I guess I don't really need to talk anymore about food.
If you want to talk about food, we can be a food podcast. We can be the foodies.
Don't be embarrassed.
This is the fancy ramen
podcast. Ramen is, if there's a single food you're forgiven for talking about on here, it is going to be the meal that you had.
That is true.
That's why I'm not bringing up the soba I made this last week.
Yeah, get that shit out of my face. No, I would say actually, I have made soba by hand before. It's actually a pretty cool process, and I don't know if you've ever made soba.
I would love to try making noodles by hand, but I don't think I have the kitchen space in the apartment, so I'd have to do it at my folks's.
So I did it when I was in college in a shitty one bedroom apartment. So you can do it. It does not take too much space, and it's super simple.
Okay, but all of our space is accounted for, and that's what.
Do you have a table
cooking here? Kind of hard. No.
What, really? Like, where do you eat your food?
Yeah, I don't have a table. I have like sort of a bar like countertop that I have two bar stools next to.
Are they, and the bar, that's like part of the apartment.
The bar is thin, and Sierra has also covered 60% with candles. There she is announcing her presence.
Tell her good job.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we never light the candles. I've been like trying to, whenever I remember, just like burn through as many candles as I can to like free up space. But I'm afraid she'll just buy more candles. And we can't afford that either. So it's like, I'm just going to have to save these like sweet smelling pieces of ancient technology for the next power outage.
It's a good idea. I can't fault you for that.
Yeah.
So I did do one thing. I did take advantage of the one thing while I was gone, since, you know, it was a work trip, and that had the majority of my day was consumed with work, like from 7:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. So I really didn't want to like drive into into any big cities, because we're talking like an hour commute at that point, and then an hour back most likely if there's traffic. You know, so I basically stayed around the hotel most of the time, and I managed to catch up on Game of Thrones season. I think it's 7 was the last one. And
sure, that sounds about right.
Did you watch it, Cookie?
I believe so.
Yeah. You know, it kind of feels fanficky at this point in time. Like, my opinion hasn't really changed too much about that show. But I finally watched the last two episodes, and I finally witnessed everything that got spoiled to me. Not like it's a big deal. I wanted to be spoiled on what happens. The one thing that bugs me, though, like even though I was fully prepared to be disappointed by this season, was that it seems like the show writers take the concept of time and become extremely liberal for it. Like, it's funny, because at one point in one of the last episodes, they joke about how Gendry was, you know, might have been on a boat rowing. Like, one of the characters tells him, like, I half expected you to be rowing right now still, making the joke that you haven't seen this character for like 5 seasons. And the last time you saw him, he was rowing on a boat to escape a place. And then in that same episode, or the next episode, they treat like traveling from Storm's End, from like one side of the continent to the Great North, as absolutely nothing. Hey, I gotta go save these guys. I'll be back in like 5 minutes. Bam, saved.
It's a breeze.
I mean, at the same time, it's cool because things are actually happening. It just seems like within the scope of 3 episodes, so much plot happened that took 2 seasons to happen before.
You want to know why?
Because there's no more books to go off of.
Correct. And the writer can't just, you know, do chapters of her dress flowed like this. I don't know. That was a great Gatsby joke. If you read that, there was a full chapter on what people were wearing at one of his parties. Anyway, but no, yeah, since there's no book to go off of, they can just go.
They're like, okay, what would be cool right now? Well, if Jaime and Tyrion got to talk, that would be cool. All right, let's make it happen. All right, what if Jon Snow and Daenerys make out in this scene? All right, that would be equally hype.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
this is what I want every show to be, honestly.
It just feels like fan fiction at this point, with really good production quality.
Isn't that what you want all of your TV shows to be?
No.
Just fanfic?
Yes,
that's what fans
really high
want.
Production quality? Why would you not? Let's just get excited about everything.
Because
he doesn't want everything. Entertainment. He wants high art here.
I want
good
writing first and
foremost. He wants Daenerys to arrive a fortnight later with their bones already just like strewn about.
And you want good writing. Good sir. You are reading You need to just read the Game of Thrones book then.
I've listened to the audiobooks.
Well, good news.
Weird
don't
flex,
know when the next
okay.
one's coming back.
Yeah, we are never getting Winds of Winter.
Yeah, exactly. So we might as well just see what the writer's got. Let's do it. Let's get hype, guys.
Speaking of good writing, I watched the remaining like 5 episodes that I had not watched of Westworld season 2. No one watches Westworld but me in this podcast, right?
Correct.
Nope. Though I'm considering it because it keeps popping up on either Amazon Prime or Hulu, one of the two, imploring me to watch.
It's Hulu that's imploring you to watch, but okay. Hulu's also going to try and charge you more to watch it.
Because it's an HBO thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So you can't watch it for free unless you have the HBO already.
Oh,
so.
I do, though, because that's also how I get that Game of Thrones hookup.
Oh, I only get HBO when Game of Thrones is on. Then after that, it's dead to me.
Then you turn it off and reactivate once the next season's out.
Pretty much. So, you know, it's been...
That's not what I did. It was really beneficial, though, because the hotel actually gave HBO Go for free. So that's really what, like, incentivized me to watch these.
Yeah.
Also, I won't say much about Westworld, then. I do want to say, Scott, that Anthony Hopkins and Ed Harris, like, those two actors alone...
I like Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, I think those two actors alone justify watching the first season of Westworld.
Mm-hmm.
Just the first season?
Well, okay, so I will say that a lot of people told me I was not going to like season 2, and I watched the first 5 episodes or so, and I was like, I actually kind of like where the season's going. And then someone told me, or the same people were like, yeah, but the ending is god-awful, horrible. And I'm like, okay, and I kind of forgot about season 2. And when I watched it, because I didn't really have much else to do, I ended up like, being pleasantly surprised. Like everything that the season sets off to tell you, like each character's story, because a lot of it in this second season is like character narrative driven. The majority of the characters that you follow all have satisfying resolutions to these like story arcs.
Right.
The one character it doesn't, I'm like kind of twisted and torn on. I feel like they did a lot for that character through the course of the season. They did a lot of like prodding and pushing the character towards like potential redemption arcs to potential further like corruption or evil arcs, I guess you could say, like the opposite of redemption. And it kind of nothing really happens. So they kind of drop the ball in one character, but I think everything else really makes up for it. And it could also be that because I had low expectations and it turned out to be like, maybe it's actually average or above average, it became that much better for me as a result.
Yeah, it cleared the bar that you had nonetheless.
That's all we can ask for on a show.
Yeah.
Clearing those bars.
I mean, if it entertains you.
That, you know, I am the most important person in the world. Solipsism is my go-to philosophy in life.
Well, and that's why he edits, because he can't count on anyone else.
Exactly.
If you guys want to start editing this, I will do the processing on it and then let you cut out whatever you want.
Yeah, I'm looking to spend some more time learning a new skill. I'd like to, but I've also said that for the past 6 months, so I also need to take the time to do it.
Well,
I know how to edit, and I don't want to add that to my plate.
I'm going to cut that out when I learn to edit so we can get a binding statement later.
The only other things I did on the West Coast were play Minesweeper and Solitaire.
You mean bitch about Minesweeper? I've never seen someone post a photo of a Minesweeper game complaining about it before until Neil's vacation.
Yeah, I sent a picture of a Minesweeper screenshot because the game literally had fucked me into a position where I only had 2 squares left. But the way Minesweeper worked, there was no way for me to determine which of those squares would be the mine and which one was a safe space. And you can't just flag one of the spots and win the game. You actually have to determine which one is. And like in that experience happening and the several experiences I had before where I would clear 2/3 of the board only to be presented with like multiple 50% to 30% scenarios was just so mind-wrecking. Like, I can't believe that Minesweeper has continued to be like a provided app or game by default on Windows, despite being a very flawed video game.
What are you talking about? This is the most real like replication of the actual activity. When sweeping for mines, every once in a while, you're going to get a false positive or a false negative. Like,
so
it comes down to chance at the end. Neil, the only more realistic this game could get is if it actually took a leg when you got it wrong.
At what point do I have the ability to pick up a giant rock and throw it at one of the spots?
Isn't that when you just randomly flag the one that you don't know? Yeah.
But if I throw the rock onto it, like, that should set it off and everyone should be fine, right?
You've got a bad arm.
Unfortunately, the smiley face goes dead whenever I click one of the mines.
Yeah. The fact that you live from game to game means that you're the person not taking these risks, Neil. You're like a battlefield commander directing that, and that smiley face is just one of your like nameless legion that you expend to clear these minefields.
Hey, Neil?
Yeah.
Did you ever make a decision?
I did, and I lost.
Yeah.
It was so
disappointing. Was it the bottom one? It was the bottom one, wasn't it?
I don't even remember.
How do you bitch about a thing and then just not
remember
give us the conclusion?
Because it was that disgusting to me. It was that annoying and disappointing.
My God. I'm betting on the bottom one. The bottom one was the mine.
We're going to have some interactive fancy ramen here where we post on one of our accounts your screenshot, and we'll have people vote to figure out which one is which.
And then I leave that instance of Minesweeper open so everyone can see it. I just don't understand that, like, you can have that app continue to exist or game continue to exist and not set up. Like, maybe that's not even like the worst thing about Minesweeper. The worst thing is when you're in an expert or higher difficulty mode and you click one square and you get like a 3 or a 4 or whatever number indicating that's how many mines you have around. And the second square you click because you have a high number there. You click someplace further away.
And it's a mine.
And it's, yeah, exactly. You think they could just generate, like, Minesweeper seeds that, like, wherever you press, you're given at least enough information to continue playing without guessing on the next random square.
Hey, Neil, that's why you always start in a corner. That's why you always start in a corner.
Okay, so there's one protocol that's built into Minesweeper, and that's whatever your first square is not a mine, right?
I don't know what Minesweeper you've been playing. I have definitely had my first square be a mine.
Really?
Normally, yeah.
Yeah, I have lost on click one.
Yeah, you can click a mine on the first guess.
Yeah, that was not happening on this version of Minesweeper, so maybe they cleaned up that part. But after that first, after that first square, it's immediately fair game. Like, wherever you click next could be a mine.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, like, you use the real mine you have.
So you can do corners, but when your corner is a 3, you're like, well, I guess the other 3 spaces directly adjacent or caddy corner to this corner are mines. What do I use with that information? And even if it's a 1,
you
that means
past them, then
that means you have a 66.6 repeated percent chance of getting an empty square if you click on another adjacent square.
Neil, are you looking for like 100% guarantee? You're playing it on the wrong difficulty, Neil. Play it on super simple.
But this is my question, Neil, is that what experience do you expect Minesweeper to provide as a game?
An intriguing, I guess just like a very deep puzzle game.
Okay, yeah, you want it to be a puzzle so there is a solution that you can come to every time. It's essentially, it's a problem or a puzzle. I'm trying to think which terminology is better, but either way, like, if executed perfectly or using a certain technique or strategy, you should be able to come to 100% conclusion every time. Is
and
that
I
the goal?
I realize that's not what Minesweeper is, but my biggest issue is the amount of time, like, because you can kind of create a puzzle scenario in those games. Like, if you get enough information, you can actually reason out quite a bit. And that's why I'm able to get like 2/3 to 3/4 of the board open usually, or like, you know, fully mined or flagged out and stuff. The issues I have are when you get to the very end and you have to guess, or at the very beginning, because you'll end up having to go through like 7 or 8 different seeds until you actually get enough information to stop guessing.
Once again, this is an immersive game, in my opinion, because sometimes you don't know you're in a minefield until you've hit a mine.
Man, if only this were in VR.
Hey, Neil, you should probably just not play that version of Minesweeper and play any of the ones not developed in between 1989 and 1990. Just any other version would be just spectacular for you. I've enjoyed Planet Mine. It's a Minesweeper, but the entire planet is Minesweeper, so it's a 360-degree thing. It's wonderful. I had it on iOS, so I'm not sure what other things it's on. But I found it very delightful, because sometimes you'd be on a super huge planet or you'd be on a really tiny planet. And it's like, cool. And yeah, so on each one of those, you can also still just your first one be a mine, because sometimes you just have bad luck. Sometimes you just have bad luck.
I feel like the first move should never be a mine, because that just shows how bad the code, like the coding job is.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I don't understand. I feel like maybe the first click would literally help you generate or start the seed for the game.
But you're asking the game to load up and then reload up after a click.
No, it wouldn't actually generate or load up until after you clicked. So I was thinking about this from like a developer's standpoint, and part of me was thinking, now granted, this would leave out way too many other possibilities, but it's like, as soon as you click, that's what generates the seed, as we'll call it. And that's a bad...
So that starts your new game?
Yeah, basically. Because, I mean, at least in the version I was playing, you're never going to hit a mine on your first click. Because technically, when you hit the first square, that one has to be safe. So that, by nature, means that mines aren't placed until you open your first square.
And nah, then man. It's got 0.2 seconds to figure out, is this one going to be a mine? It says it's a 1 or a 0 on each of these squares, and as soon as you click, it generates the entire thing, and it goes, bam, what you happen to click on, it generated a 1 there, so it's a mine. Sorry, guy.
No, but that's the thing. Like, in at least
you want
the
loading
Microsoft...
screens in Minesweeper?
What's
you
that?
You want loading screens in
no,
Minesweeper?
No, it's not
now?
Like it needs a loading screen. This is not a hard, complicated process.
I don't know, man. Bethesda tried to make Minesweeper, and it was full of bugs.
God, Bethesda can't make anything not full of bugs. All you're technically doing is it has like a protocol, which is like how many mines you have, and the playing board is already decided based on your settings. So, the number of mines is determined too in your settings. So let's say it's like a 10 by 10 grid, and you click on A1. So all it technically does is take the number of mines there are for that 10 by 10 grid, let's say 20, and it randomly assesses or chooses where those are going to be located. And with the only conditional that A1 does not have a mine placed. So that, like...
And that would make sense.
From a application or like a process standpoint, that should take literally, it should be instantaneous.
Yeah.
There's also, part of me was thinking, though, that, like, maybe it would be good to script a series of levels or seeds based on what square you click. So if you click on A1, it always generates the same seed. But then I kind of felt like then you limited yourself to what your, like, the board size was. So if it's by, like, a 20 by 20 grid, that means there's only 400 unique puzzles.
Yeah.
So yeah, then at that point, you're also having to program each of these puzzles in rather than, you know, just the game saying, hey, as soon as you click the little start new game thing, it just generates a field
right.
of randomness. Mm-hmm. I do have something to point out to you, Neil. You mentioned that how can this be something that's still just widely available on all the platforms? Minesweeper does not come standard in Windows 10.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And it's because it's a shitty game.
Are there any games that come in Windows 10 now that I think about it?
Candy Crush.
Candy Crush.
Yeah. Candy Crush?
Yes. It doesn't pre-installed, but it will automatically install when you're on Windows.
Candy Crush Soda Saga, trusted Microsoft Store app. Okay.
Yep.
It
was one of the few games that came on the Windows 10 tablet that I got for
for during Black Friday.
Are you uninstalling it right now, Scott?
No, I'm looking for Space Pinball.
Oh shit. Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't think we were going this OG on the gaming here. So I'm both surprised and delighted by this topic.
Minesweeper aside, while I didn't necessarily play this too much over the last week, I technically finished it last night, but played it more the previous week. I am excited to talk about the game 999, or I think it's like 9. Let me double check, actually.
No, no, no.
It's 9 hours, 9 persons, 9 doors, and it's part of the Zero Escape trilogy.
Oh, I typed in nice, nice, nice.
Nice, 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 indeed. I think if you look up 999, it might not actually bring up any
I got
relevance.
Brooklyn 99.
I also got Brooklyn 99.
Great show, though.
So the official title is 9 hours, 9 persons, 9 doors. It's a visual novel game, meaning that it's mostly text-driven, but this one has a high element of puzzles and puzzle interaction. And the premise of this game is that you are one of 9 people that wake up on a cruiser, like a luxury cruiser, luxury ship, whatever, like a passenger ship.
Cruise ship?
Cruise ship, thank you. The obvious was staying hidden for me, apparently. And as one
puzzles.
Of these 9 people, each of you have a bracelet that have a number on it. And so no one has repeating numbers from these 9 people. It's 1 through 9. And then you have a series of doors that you can enter. And the doors all have numbers on them, 1 through 9. The only way to get through the doors, I'm not going to explain like the reason why you have to do this and like what shoehorns or forces your characters to follow these rules, but basically you have to get the digital root of the door number through adding the characters' numbers together. So if a door has 5 on it, getting the digital root of 5 would mean that you'd either have to have 14, which 1 plus 4 then is 5, or 23. So you need to add up your characters. Like you have to combine your characters in a way that would give you either the sum of 14 or 23, and then only those characters are allowed to go through that door. And no one else can go through that door at that point. So usually what it basically involves is getting to different doors and figuring out what characters can go into each door. And then those serve as like the storyline branching points. So like if you get presented with a door with a 4 and a door with a 5, you have to divide up the party of these characters to get the digital root for 4 and 5. And then story happens and you get puzzles, which are usually related to like hexadecimal, base 10, like the relationship between those two and some other things.
Would you say these are pretty niche games then, or do they teach these concepts early on effectively?
This one teaches everything you would need to know early on. And after doing so, like the main character that you play through does a good job of also like giving you hints and pointers if you're really struggling on a puzzle.
Do your math homework.
You also
stop
get
sucking scrub.
You also get like
Here's a calculator
in your menu. This is originally a DS game. So assumedly it's on one of your screens that doesn't have the puzzle. So you can use your calculator to determine things like what your digital roots are or like relating to hexadecimal too.
But how am I supposed to blow on my character's faces?
I was maybe 2 hours into this game thinking, yeah, this is pretty cool. One of the reasons why I started playing it is because the main guy behind the Zero Escape trilogy is teaming up or has teamed up with the Danganronpa director, and they're making their quote-unquote last murder game together. So that's not going to be out for another year or so. But I was finally like, well, you know, I had picked this game up before during some sale, and it's time to actually give it a shot. And around the 2-hour mark, the characters are like in a situation that's kind of like urgent. So let's say it's not maybe necessarily a good time to have like a deep-seated conversation about something or other. And suddenly it had a Metal Gear Solid moment. We're like...
It screams Snake at you?
No, like every Metal Gear Solid game, with like an exception to 5 and... with an exception to 5, usually has like multiple moments in the game where a character decides it's time to talk about some ridiculously unconnected or like some theory or thing that you don't think should seemingly be connected to the storyline. I don't know, like Alaskan Rats, basically. And as soon as that conversation happens, like my attitude towards the game skyrocketed. Like I even made the joke to someone that like this character isn't this character; it's Master Miller. Oh, I really can't go any further because I feel like you guys should try this out if you're ever bored. It's really not too long of a game, but it definitely.
Where should we find it? As far since it is available, you said on the DS. Does it have any re-releases?
Yes, it's on Steam now.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
Sweet. I will not.
It has maybe one of my favorite twists I've experienced in a while. If this game were released this year, I would say it has the best story of any game I've played this year, which maybe isn't saying a whole lot because I don't think this year has necessarily the best scripts.
No, that's a fair point, but it's still like it does speak to the quality of the game that you played.
Yeah.
If it is the best, I mean, it has to beat out what stories did we encounter this year besides God of War?
God of War, Red Dead Redemption.
Red Dead Redemption, yeah.
Octopath Traveler.
Octopath Traveler, I don't think should ever get best story.
I'm just saying.
I didn't think that was in the running from the start.
But I'm just saying, like, these are the games that come straight to my mind if we're talking about narrative or story. And I can't think of that many strong contenders to begin with. I think God of War has a really good story.
And I enjoyed Red Dead's story quite a bit. You guys haven't finished it, I assume, but...
I have not yet.
It is both... I don't know. It's satisfying to a point.
You know, it's also really satisfying. So satisfying that you're surprised.
Well, it's not Minesweeper.
It's 999. But don't get me wrong, it is still kind of a niche title when you asked about that too, in that it's still a visual novel, it's still really puzzle-driven, and it's narrative-heavy. So, at least the Steam version has a shit ton of voice acting, so you aren't reading it aloud in your head. It's not, like, as boring in that regard. Because I know, like, visual novels are really hard to approach if you're not someone that grew up or playing games like Baldur's Gate, playing other visual novels, playing text-only adventure games, but...
Baldur's Gate was a visual novel?
It wasn't, but it's super... Like, have you not played any of those old school like D&D games? You get walls of text.
Yeah, you're reading quite a bit. I mean, even if we're talking like, this isn't D&D, this is classic Bethesda classic, yeah. Morrowind. Morrowind, like the first guy you talk to leaving... I don't know. It's like a dock or something. I mean, this is where I stopped playing the game. So it's as much of the knowledge of Morrowind as I have. The first guy you talk to gives you at least like 6 or 7 pages worth of copy that you can read through about the world and what's going on. Uriel Septim in Elder Scrolls 4 is like, you're the chosen one. Avenge me, or, you know, like, take the amulet. Like that's the level of writing that we see in a jump between like 5 years of gaming or so.
God,
I see. I just actively chose to not read and just go.
Well, yeah. I think that was the right choice in Oblivion.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, they've shortened it even more because that was too much dialogue. You just get Sean. Where's Sean? And that's it. Like, you can do whatever the hell you want and forget Sean exists in Fallout 4. So, like, these big adventurous titles that can have a good story tied into them if the developer chooses to do so, they're still even using way less text to convey, like, story, and they're using less dialogue on average, I think, than they used to.
Boy.
Those Baldur's Gate games, even, what is it? I'm trying to think, like, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. like, you had quite a bit of dialogue to sift through. Even the first Mass Effect, like, when you're doing story stuff, there's actually quite a bit of conversation going on to what we're seeing now. Red Dead Redemption 2 had a story that I enjoyed. You get yes or no, or like positive, negative responses in it. Once again, the dialogue is written out for you and your choices are relatively limited, but also what other characters are saying to you are either like this stream of consciousness or just like word vomit that's going on to fill you in until you get to the next action sequence or the next segment of active gameplay, so to speak.
And that's what I live for, just word vomit until the next action sequence.
Yeah, or just take it out and have Call of Duty. Like, just have all the high-octane action you want, be entertained with that, and fuck any of the like half-assed dialogue that's going to be in it. Just get the fun part going.
Hey, Scott, thank you. Thank you for making me feel appreciated in this cacophony of nerds that I hang out with.
Hey, man, people can shit-talk games like Call of Duty and whatnot, but if it's entertaining you, like, I wanted to bring up this topic when we were talking Game of Thrones. If it entertains you, it's serving its purpose. If it doesn't entertain you for a long time, I normally don't like it that much because it's not serving its purpose very well. But like, if it's burning up time and you're like distracted from the existential pain of death, you're doing better than if you're not playing that video game, you know?
That's a good point. If you enjoy getting infuriated over something, like, it's still serving its purpose.
Yeah, then you play Smash like me.
Oh, yeah. You're online now, by the way.
I am online. I am good to go. I haven't played online because I kind of wanted to save it for our father-son match, but...
My God, I suck at this fucking game.
Dude, me too. I went out... Neil, we're going to get back to 9-9.
Fine. I'm done talking about it.
You're satisfied? Okay. Well,
cool. What games have you been playing, Scott?
my first 30 minutes of Smash, I played with the Joy-Con in the essentially the square controller, your controller support that comes with the Nintendo Switch. And I thought to myself, I have either gotten very shitty at Smash within the past couple years not playing, or this is the worst controller setup for this type of game I could possibly encounter. And I went out and bought a pro controller literally before I got home from work that day, which was what, Friday? Yeah. So it took 30 minutes of playing this game without a pro controller to make me go out and buy a pro controller when I'm a particularly stingy person when it comes to spending money. And I was very satisfied with the outcome. But this game is a lot harder to play compared to the others. Just removing the on-hit perfect shielding with releasing the perfect shielding with a hit is very tricky timing. And it also means there are some attacks you can't perfect shield against, really.
Exactly. And I will say, Scott, get used to playing with the shitty Joy-Con as well, because 9 times out of 10, you're going to be playing. I guess maybe not you. For me, I'm playing mostly in handheld mode. So I've got no choice.
I haven't gone to handheld mode yet, but it is so much harder to play it in handheld mode than with the pro controller. And the other thing is too, is like, now that I'm thinking about it, I may have found the DS version, like the DS Super Smash Bros. 4, preferable of a control scheme than the Joy-Con, which is saying something. Because I also didn't have the C-Stick DS either. I was playing on a like DS XL.
Oh. Yeah, wow.
Before the C-Stick, and I still think I like that better.
Damn. Tell us how you really feel.
The Joy-Con are not built for this masterpiece.
No, they are not.
They cannot handle the greatness that is Smash Brothers Ultimate.
So, how much have you been playing?
I ate one meal yesterday and got up from my couch several times to hydrate or take care of my dog. That was it. That was it. I didn't do anything else but play Smash. So I don't know how far I'm in the story or the story mode, the adventure mode. And I went right into it. I didn't even know there was a classic mode until this morning.
Hey, me too.
Last night. And then I started playing that because that's way easier to unlock fighters.
So much easier.
Also, since there's like 70 something fighters to unlock on the roster, there are a lot of new challengers approaching, which keeps me pretty busy.
Who have you been using?
In the story mode, I leaned very heavily on Marth at the start, but I just unlocked Link and Samus and I've used a lot of them, but my sleeper favorite that I did not think I'd play the most of is Isabel from Animal Crossing. Yeah. She is the cute dog secretary from Town Hall and possibly one of my favorite new additions to the Smash roster.
I could take it. I have been... Oh, God. I think I just switched over to Mario recently for the actual Children of Light story mode. But right now, the Inkling is my
favorite. The Inkling
favorite.
Is really good, too. Yeah. I played a lot of the Inkling once I got them. The down B for that character is a lot of fun to mess around with and super useful.
Gosh, I'm trying to think. What are my thoughts on Super Smash right now? I'm enjoying it. It's got a lot of conversations that it's starting for, like, just random friends at work. They're just like, oh, yeah, they saw me walking around with my Pokeball. So they're like, you have a Switch? And I was like, yeah, I have a Switch. And they're like, sweet. We're all going to be off on Friday. How about you? I'm like, nah, I'm going to work. And they're like, oh, balls. It's like, all right. Anyway, so now we're all going to be getting together for lunch on Monday, just playing Smash together, which should be nice and fun. Watch me get my ass kicked.
Yeah, I would have taken a day off for a sick day on Friday had I not already had a worker who was out that I was filling in for. And so I just, you know, hummed the tune in my head all day at work instead. And then I've been doing it since Thursday night. Just even Neil caught me earlier. So, man, I am so happy. Like, the thing that I've really enjoyed from Smash Brothers, honestly, since Melee, is the weird challenge matches that they add in that totally create just these very unique fighting scenarios that are supposed to be reminiscent or like odes to other games that didn't make it or fit in.
With the spirit battles?
Yeah, the spirit battles. A lot of them are very fun. I think I don't like how powerful some of the spirits are in just, like, there's some that have, like, a 13,000 score for how strong they are. But it's just, like, time and time again, I noticed that it is definitely set up, if you're playing it like the normal difficulty, to take on 1-star and 2-star spirit battles to circumvent like 3-star and 4-star fights, which probably happen at the very end when you have a full roster kind of stacked out. But I have several like primary spirits that I've leveled up all the way to the point to transforming them into a new, more powerful spirit, and then almost leveled up all the way to the max again. And they're just enough for some of these fights where I'm not receiving like 30% damage from a standard attack from the opponents I'm trying to like fight against.
No, that totally makes sense. And I've leveled up a few. I haven't actually evolved any of my spirits, but there are definitely some fights that I'm just like, nah, I don't want to do that, because anytime I hear hostile assist trophies are going to be in the air in play, I'm just like, what's the point?
There is a legendary assist trophy that you can get that essentially gives you extra damage against, or what is it? It's an assist spirit, or like a secondary spirit that gives you extra damage against assist trophies. And until I had that, I also didn't fuck around with assist trophy fights too much, unless they were more passive. Because there are a couple, like there was one with a Starman in it where it just stun locked me and hit me like 4 or 5 times, and then I'd get insta black lightninged off the screen. And I tried it like 8 times, and then I went back with that, and it still took a couple tries, but I ultimately just KO'd the Starman before I started the fight. And once you take out the assist trophies, those fights are a joke. So
that's brilliant.
It's set up to be difficult and take a lot of time. And it's hard to get around it, because although I'm not the best player, I felt like at a normal difficulty, there was still a lot of things that were just like prohibitively difficult for anyone who is not like playing in competitive Smash tournaments. And then maybe even then, there's just sometimes some bullshit. Yeah.
So I do have a question for you Have you tried out all the different modes?
I have not. I'm looking forward to seeing what training is all about with now getting to see launch distances and if there's any other like things that they've added to it besides that. There is the new there's a Challenger Approaches like rematch door that every once in a while pops open if you lose.
That door's Sierra's been a godsend.
Yeah, Sierra told me that I needed to admit to being a little bitch on the podcast because I got mad at her when she crossed in front of the TV when I was fighting a challenge match and lost it.
Yikes.
So when I found out that door was there, I was like, oh, good, okay. I can chill out for half a second. Because the other thing I've noticed is if you lose to these, like the new challenger that approaches, because there's so many, might not be the same one. It's like I lost a Ganon fight and I was really excited to get him. And then I ended up having a new challenger approach against Wario. And I was like, no, I don't want this. Like, get him out of here. Bring Ganon back.
So I thought that they mentioned that the unlocks were going to be in the order of the game, but they're very random.
They feel very random because I already have King K. Rool. It could be order of the games that have been released or like character releases.
No, because I've got Bayonetta. Edition.
You have Bayonetta. Oh, yeah. I have Bayonetta, too, now that I think about it. I have Bayonetta as well, but I don't have Dark Samus. Dark Samus is before Bayonetta.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Neither do I. Not to cut the conversation short, are you going to get the Battle Pass or the Season Pass?
Oh, hell yeah. Because my new main is going to be released as the first DLC character.
Yeah, that was exciting for me, and I'm excited to see his amiibo.
Yeah, for anybody who has not been privy to this, the first DLC character that is not Piranha Plant is going to be Joker from Persona 5.
Joker.
I actually told my old roommate, close friend Kyle, about Joker being in Smash. And he thought I meant Batman's Joker. And he was like, I will kill myself if they do that.
Is it Heath Ledger Joker?
Said, no. That's DLC number 2 that they break out. Yeah. And it's not Heath Ledger Joker either. It's the one from, it's the really bad one from whatever that really shitty DC movie with all the villains being villains. Suicide Squad. It's Suicide Squad Joker.
Leto.
Jared Leto. Well, what's wrong with Jared Leto? It's just a different take on it.
No, it is a different take. And I think it also should be noted that like if you're going to have someone do the Heath Ledger performance every time, it's going to make some movies work and some movies not. It'll probably never be as good because every actor needs to find their own niche when playing a like repeated character like that.
And I mean,
but Suicide Squad is just so bad.
That Joker works within that universe, but I like when you ask me to say what Joker is, I still immediately think of Mark Hamill.
Was that the funny Joker?
That's the animated, the original Batman animated Joker.
Okay, because they're like, there's some like Reddit that I was reading a few months ago, like breaking down the different ages and different kinds of Jokers. Like, there's the,
the Jack Nicholson Joker?
Yeah, like the Jack Nicholson Joker was more of a clown versus the Heath Ledger Joker, which was more of a maniac.
Yeah.
Followed by the Jared Psychopath, Leto Joker.
Yeah.
And each one's got their own specific thing, and they were like breaking it down into like the Golden Age versus postmodern and promo and a bunch of other shit. Either way, it doesn't matter. What were we talking about?
Mark Hamill's illustrious voiceover career.
God damn, he's good.
He is really good. I mean, he's done so much stuff that I only find out about like way after the fact.
He was the Guyver. The Guyver.
He was the Guyver?
The Guyver. Yeah.
Holy shit. That was the first anime to give me nightmares because I didn't know the hero could die.
Oh, well, okay. Just to be clear, he wasn't involved in the cartoon as far as I know. He was in the live action Guyver movie. Yes,
that still gave me nightmares because that was also very...
Have you ever heard the opening of Guyver?
No, I haven't. You'll have to put it in
It is so good.
Even, that's right. He's He's even done like a bunch of characters for the regular show. Mark Hamill has.
Yeah, that dude, he is such a good voice actor. It's like kind of, I don't know, like a lot of people obviously don't value voice acting as highly as like acting. So
right.
it probably
they all know
sounds
him as Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, and so it probably sounds like sacrilegious when I say this, but I think you could completely get rid of the Luke Skywalker role and he would still have an amazing catalog of work.
You're
dude,
preaching
he was
to
in
the
Metalocalypse.
Yeah.
Wait, he was in Metalocalypse?
Yeah.
He was in Metalocalypse.
He's Senator Stampington and Mr. Salatia and news anchor and all this other stuff.
Good God.
He's on a shitload of stuff.
He was Krabby Clown? Wow. I didn't realize he was a voice actor until just now.
Well, that's like his bread and butter, honestly. He's been, like, I've seen him do a handful of roles in the past, like, 10 to 15 years outside of Star Wars, where he'll play, like, I remember him being a professor in some movie.
He was Fire Lord Ozai?
It's just that he kind of got, I mean, he's a good actor, and I don't think he's necessarily a great actor as Luke Skywalker.
No.
maybe he wasn't back then, but he's become a fantastic actor, but unfortunately, he got shoehorned into the role of Luke Skywalker. I mean, it also started his career, so it's like
without
you know,
it, does he get the foot in the door for all these other things?
Right.
Who knows?
But so it's weird to say this, but like the Luke Skywalker role, I think probably typecast him in a way that hurt his acting career.
He was himself in Johnny Bravo. Now that does make sense.
That Johnny Bravo was like a pretty great cartoon.
It was. But no, because I don't really remember seeing him in anything besides him as Luke Skywalker.
For acting roles specifically, right?
Yeah, for acting roles specifically, because apparently I've heard his voice all over the fucking place. This guy littered my childhood.
The deep, deep sinkhole that is an IMDb page for an actor that is like 60 years old.
There was a Men in Black TV series in 1998. When did Men in Black come out?
Hey, I'm still on
1990,
IMDb.
Who knew?
I am also on IMDb.
Are you really?
Yes. That's how I found out he was on Hey Arnold.
He does not voice any characters in Smash Ultimate, however.
That's sad.
Except for maybe he might do Crazy Hand.
Do you think anyone's just going to buy Smash like
and not get the extra fighters?
Well, I guess my question was, do you think anyone got swayed so much by the introduction of Joker that they're going to buy Switch now or buy Smash now?
I doubt they would because at that point they'd have to be looking for Smash content. But via the introduction of Joker, I am now getting the season pass.
That's true. The season pass, I probably was going to buy anyway, but the actual urgency of the purchase was definitely amped up when I knew that Joker was going to be added to the roster. It's the same way that I think when they did the last DLCs that nobody bought Smash 4 because Cloud was released, but he was a huge addition to the game. And I think a lot of people were really happy for it and surprised by it. Same thing as Sonic. Like, nobody's going to buy Smash because they added Sonic back in Brawl. But Sonic was a really big addition. That IP, or essentially that character acquisition, I think really, it does something to almost like cement the status of what Smash Brothers means. Like, to get into the game of Smash Brothers as a fighter is a real like milestone within your game or in development of a character, which is why it does not explain that like certain characters find their way onto the roster.
Ooh, like who?
hold on,
someone Neil, in mind.
Neil's got this.
Hold on, before we talk about the purple elephant in the room, I want to make sure that we're on the same page. I agree with everything you've said so far, and it makes sense. It's like this maybe isn't necessarily trying to get people that aren't as interested in the game to buy it, but more to get like the season pass.
Amplify the hype, yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm like a person that will, like, unless Tiffany wants it, I probably won't get Smash because I'm not really big into Smash or fighters that much anymore.
I mean, if you have it online, I would sit down and play this game with you almost any single day.
Whereas, but, like, the desire for me to play this game is, like, pretty low. If I'm going to play a fighter, it's going to be Street Fighter V, I think. Or Battle Arena Toshinden on the... No, not really.
I'll play Street Fighter with you.
But the thing that hit me was that when you talked about Sonic, and was it really a hype thing for Smash to bring Sonic in? Or was
it was a hype thing for Sonic. So we are on the same page where for a franchise to get their character into Smash, it is a really big deal for them. Like, forever being immortalized, this is an important enough game series to be nodded to by one of the best, like, party fighters in existence. Really the only iconic party fighter that is so well known that people who don't play video games are still familiar with the basic concept of it.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's like the Sonic thing basically felt like Mario got a new, younger, maybe somewhat
and even
like,
more Luigi.
No. Mario got like a weird, poorly treated stepbrother when they got the Sonic IP. I mean, they don't own the Sonic IP, but like, I don't remember exactly what it is. So the inclusion of Sonic was kind of like Mario coming up to his gang of friends, you know, Marth and Roy and Metroid, Metroid Samus, and being like, hey, this is my new baby brother, Sonic. Yeah, I mean, you know, I have to bring him around because my parents want me to now. He's fine, though. Just, you know, he's fine. Don't worry about him. That's what it felt like to me.
Okay.
Yep, he's a character. But yeah, so who's the questionable entries? I want to hear this. I'm Karus.
Who is Shulk and why is Shulk not supposed to be in a franchise as respected as Super Smash Brothers? Well, you see, Shulk is a shit character who comes from a shit game, and I don't really think there's much to argue about that. Although Xenoblade Chronicles ultimately made it to number 2 in the the top selling charts for Wii games and became the 8th best selling game of all time on the Wii system, that was a mistake. It was a fluke, and we all should just get on with our lives and delete Shulk from the roster.
On a counterpoint, I will say the reason that Shulk is important to have into Super Smash Bros. Is because, obviously, Nintendo doesn't have that many original IPs that did super successful during that Wii era, and Shulk is the... God, I really hope he's a main character in the game. but no, Shulk being the main character of Xenoblade Chronicles is that representation of Nintendo's
Xenoblade
fighting spirit.
Chronicles, yeah.
I mean, the fact Nintendo's... that they have the fucking Wii Fit Trainer as a fighter, like,
yeah.
I think
That's bro fucking it. Oh, Wii Fit Trainer.
Hold on.
So much time with her.
I'm not saying that she does not deserve to be in the game. What I'm saying is that the fact that they had to come up with it, it's brilliant. I agree with you. But that just shows how far they have to stretch to get things, to get like more characters in that are quote unquote first party content.
Yeah.
And I can see that, but I'm also going to say we've spent so much time with this beloved character. She taught us how to get fit on that stupid fucking Wii balance board.
I mean, and they did have to snub other characters, like literally any Golden Sun protagonist or Cooking Mama to make room for Shulk. So,
God, you just made Cooking Mama a thing. DLC character number 2. I am excited. Get hype, boys.
Yeah, if you think like Game & Watch's Frying Pan is good, like Cooking Mama has to have a way better moveset than that.
Okay, so my question is, do you think there's any possibility that Waluigi ends up as like the last character in the first season? Or maybe the first character in the second season pass?
I mean, I would kill for that.
I think everyone would. So Nintendo's not going to do it because Nintendo is a company of sadness and disappointment.
they brought in what would have been like joke characters, I think, of Ridley or like King K. Rool. Like these are two fighters that I'm excited for.
Fucking Piranha Plant is a joke character.
They brought in Piranha Plant.
I love that.
Like they're bringing in these characters that people have joked about. It's like, oh, wouldn't it be so cool? And also impossible. And they acknowledge that. And Nintendo's like, give us 3 more months and Piranha Plant is a thing. Like,
but Waluigi, it's too wanted.
No, he's
we're gonna get
so
Bowsette before we get Waluigi.
No, he has to be, right? I thought the entire idea, like, and granted, I'm not super excited for Smash, so I don't really participate in the community, but I thought it was basically like a forlorn conclusion. A forlorn? Is that the saying? A foregone conclusion?
There it's foregone.
Forlorn's
yeah.
Very
yeah,
sad.
A foregone conclusion that he was going to be in the game. It's just a matter of when they would decide to grace his presence with us.
Yeah, I mean, we are at the forlorn conclusion that Waluigi is currently not in the game, but I hold out hope every day that he does make it in. I just think about all of the games that Waluigi has had the, that his presence has graced a copy with. And I mean, he has been in the running since N64 era, and pretty much every big party, like Mario Party, Mario Kart game since then has fit him into their framework. I think the only one I can think of that he doesn't appear in that is a surprise is I don't think he makes it into Mario Kart 64, but he's there for all the other Mario Karts. He's there for all the other Mario Parties for the most part. He makes it into most of the Mario Sports games as far as I'm remembering. So he is nearly...
Was Piranha Plant a trophy?
Iconic and synonymous. I don't think Piranha Plant was ever a trophy. But he's nearly as iconic and synonymous as Wario at this point, minus the Wario standalone games and the WarioWare content, which is a very unique spin from... Wario's original identity. I don't know. I think because there are very few games that Luigi has had individually. We have Luigi's Mansion. Those are the Luigi standalone games, and yet he's been included since the first Smash Brothers. And now I think it's time for...
Because he's Mario, Luigi, Mario.
I think it's time for the antithesis of the Mario Luigi bunch, the Wario and Waluigi duo to be reunited.
That'd be nice.
I'm not trying to have a hot take here. I'm genuinely behind this. Add Waluigi to Smash because I would play him a lot. I can already see some of his moves. He has the dash attack, his side B special is him in a cart, and his over smash is Peach's where he uses his tennis racket. I can see it all coming together. I just don't know what his up B is yet. Probably just a really high jump because he has super long legs.
Smash is just such a weird thing.
And no one's been able to recreate it successfully.
Yeah, oh my god.
What are you talking about? PlayStation All-Stars was the greatest game.
That was such a trash game.
I enjoyed PlayStation All-Stars.
I thought it had some interesting ideas, and it was cool to see that cast of characters, but that was not a good game.
No. It felt very clunky. That was my main concern and complaint, is... Smash
it
feels
was the Mortal Kombat,
yeah, very
brawler
tight.
Type games.
Here's my question: is it more likely we see Dan from Street Fighter V or Street Fighter in general, or Waluigi at this point?
Dan is actually not an assist spirit.
Oh, yeah, so unfortunately, he's not going to be
a trash
character.
One. That.
So we technically,
oh my god, it's such a great fight! It's like you're fighting Ken. But were you fighting Ken or Ryu?
I think you fight Ken in that one. Yeah.
Yep. You're fighting Ken, and he just likes to taunt. So he pretty much does a move and then taunts 3 times. It's just
so
like
you just you shield or dodge the move, and then you just kick the shit out of Dan. Oh my god! I know why I've been doing bad at Smash. I just realized that I haven't been using the shield and down to dodge nearly as much. I've only been doing side to side.
Also, remember, there is a jump button. You don't have to push up.
Oh, I actually took off the tilt controls immediately.
You go.
Yeah. I don't fuck around with that tap up to jump. I'm too much of a Samus main where I need to use her essentially kick that goes straight up and comes her heel kick.
I could dig it.
Yeah. I'm so glad we actually didn't have Minesweeper be the longest topic that we talked about, because I was worried.
Is anyone playing anything else besides Neil and Minesweeper? Scott, have you got any more Red Dead time in? Nope.
No, I actually, I think I said last time that I finished Red Dead, and since then, like, I am 100% completely done with Red Dead. We'll probably loan it for somebody else to play and not give it another glance for another couple years before I want to go back. I did get to actually, I got to see a lever action rifle the other day, though. That was pretty cool. I was like, hey, this is like Red Dead. little, you know, little side loading chamber and everything.
I'm proud of you. You should still really get...
It was heavy as shit. How does Arthur carry that many guns?
Video games, man. Once you get tired of playing Smash for a little bit and you eventually get that PlayStation Plus, then we can finally play Red Dead Online.
Yeah, that's true.
Is that out now?
Yep. I imagine, too, it'll get more and more fleshed out.
Apparently, it's its own story.
Really?
Yeah, like, apparently you start off in jail as your character and you get busted out of jail.
By other players already online?
No, by
that would be
the
cool.
story.
Okay.
That would be cool, but... And then you go...
Can you play online offline?
No.
No.
What? That's a
so you have kind to of a question the... is that? That's the most confusing thing I've heard.
Maybe I want more story, but I don't want to play
online
with 14-year-olds.
Well, it's okay, because you don't have to hear the 14-year-olds. You just have to avoid all their lassos.
Yeah, you're going to get drawn and quartered, but you don't have to actually hear any like trash talk while it happens. Also, the lasso is such an underappreciated item. I found out that you can go to someone's camp with the bandit mask on, lasso and hogtie them, and then loot their camp. And as long as you don't loot their person, you take no bad guy points.
Yeah, because that's Holy shit. Fucking realistic thing.
Yeah, John Marston, man, I'm a real good guy, but don't camp alone anywhere near my ranch.
So if you lasso people up, the other people in the camp, if there are more than one, would
you lasso
aggressive.
Them too then? Yeah. Oh yeah. No, they become aggressive while you lasso them. I've had people try and shoot from the hip while they're being lassoed.
Oh, that's cool. That's nice, yeah. At least.
So they don't, they're not like, hey, what you doing, buddy? While you're like tying their arms behind their back.
Stop that.
They, as soon as you pull out the lasso and start like spinning it, they know that it's coming for them and they don't like that. There is literally a challenge in which you lasso somebody and then like run with their body in tow for 3,500 feet. And they definitely die before the 3,500 foot mark, Oof. No matter what you do.
So you want to do it to some KKK members?
I mean, I just did it to a guy because, you know, I got to clear those challenges more than I got to worry about my morality.
Yikes.
Hey, man, Arthur was going to die one way or another. I don't have anything keeping me good. Which, by the way, you guys really should you should play to the conclusion of at least the Red Dead story, the Red Dead 2 redemption portion, and not the Red Dead Redemption 2 epilogue to Red Dead Redemption 1 part. If that makes any sense.
You lost me.
Yeah.
No, that's probably good because it means I'm not spoiling anything. Yeah, there's definitely like a main story and an epilogue portion to this. And I would say that the main story is very much worth completing. And the epilogue you kind of feel compelled to do and has some fun parts. But if you just get to the like, if you get to the conclusion written in the story of Red Dead Redemption 2, then that would be good.
I can dig it. I probably never will.
I'll attempt to. I'm sure I'll have some time.
Neil, you can dead sprint it pretty easy. Like, just keep blowing through those story missions.
What buttons do I have to push to dead sprint? Is it like Deadeye?
You have to tap. If you tap it with a good enough rhythm, like on your horse, you can make your stamina last longer and you can sprint until you're dead.
Until you're dead.
Yeah. Nice. Excellent. All right. Do we have anything else to talk about? Is there any news you guys feel warrants some discussion?
Oh, I did mention a thing in something a while ago.
Yes, I remember that thing.
Oh, yeah, it was Bethesda and another bug, but this one was an IRL bug where the people who were submitting tickets for, like, issues, i.e. the messenger bag, temporarily had access to other people's tickets.
Oof.
So basically it gave them their name, showed the receipts, what kind of card they bought their version on. Yeah, it addresses. So, yeah, that was a fun little bug.
little Easter egg that Bethesda threw in, because obviously their cybersecurity is just as dated as their
Morrowind engine. Yeah. Hey, it worked for the last three games. The last four games.
Did
the
it, though?
Six games?
You know what? The most depressing thing. Okay. Just real quickly, getting on my soapbox for a second. I guess I should ask this first and foremost. Are people still, like, shitting on Fallout 76?
Yes.
Yeah. The only thing that players... I saw an article titled, "The Only Thing Players Are Exchanging in Fallout 76 is Exploits." So that's where the zeitgeist is at right now on 76.
All in all, I do hear from like actual people though that either people are really enjoying Fallout 76, I don't know how, or the majority of people are just not enjoying Fallout 76.
I feel bad for the minority because like they probably want to find a community or a place where they can talk and enjoy the game. But I'm assuming that same community, be it Reddit or whatever message board or whatever Discord, is just chock full of people shit-talking the game. I'm not saying shit-talking it is wrong. I just feel bad for the people that genuinely enjoy Fallout 76.
I think Fallout 76 is doing a really good job of providing a service of entertainment without some of these people even needing to buy it.
No, that makes total sense. Yeah. I'll just say it did not do its job for me, for I was bored. I barely pick up video games and become bored. This was a video game that did not have text or talking, and I was still bored.
You got to get some Baldur's Gate in you. Good game. Okay, I think it's time to wrap it up. So if you guys would like to,
You don't even know how to do it. Comments, questions, hey, Fancy Ramen.
I never
You can send
it
into podcast@fancyramen.com.
Don't be afraid to tell your friends about us and Scott fucking up.
Yeah,
so that way we can have more people listen.
Don't take away my mistakes from our review scores. I'm not saying you have to give us 5 stars, but I am saying in today's app and like environment of rating economy, anything less than 5 stars is a death sentence. So our blood is on your hands. You can find us on iTunes or the Apple Podcast Store, anywhere else you get your podcasts. I'm going to go ahead and close out the episode with other fighters that really are irrelevant to the Smash franchise. Pit, Palutena, Dark Pit.
I just weren't a fan of Kid Icarus.
Yeah, Kid Icarus is trash. Rob shouldn't be in there, but I understand why Rob's important enough to be in there. Wolf McCloud, or is he McNebula? I don't know.
That's Star Fox's
Nemesis?
Enemy.
Sure.
Nemesis and brother.
I guess Duck Hunt gets in there because it was sold.
Fuck you.
With
that's why.
The, yeah,
fuck you.
Corrin from Fire Emblem, get that shit out of here.
Mm. Well, then at that point, are you vetoing the characters because you didn't like them as characters, or are you vetoing characters for the game?
I'm vetoing characters because I think they're stupid to add to Smash, and I played a lot of Corrin, so it's not like I don't like playing these characters. It's these characters are dumb and shouldn't be in this game. All right,
continue.
It's
with
been
your
a
list.
Pleasure.
Yeah, that's been Fancy
that's
Ramen. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
Have a good week,
Smash.
Everybody.
Bye.